Hello, everybody, and welcome to our quarterly podcast discussing the activities to support consistent application. Now, this podcast covers the first quarter of 2023. Now, my name is Bruce McKenzie, and I'm a member of the ISB, and I get to chair the IFRS Interpretations Committee. Now, I'm here today with Sophie Mazel and Brian O'Donovan, who are members of the Interpretations Committee, and will be joining me for this discussion. Now, in today's podcast, we'll cover the discussions at the March 2023 committee meeting. At this meeting, the committee finalized one agenda decision. We discussed a number of new submissions, including one related to insurance contracts. We provided input to the ISB's business combinations, disclosure, goodwill, and impairment project, and commented on a few of the potential annual improvements. Now, the meeting papers and a recording of the committee's discussions are available on the website. So let's get started with the finalized agenda decision on definition of a lease substitution rights. Brian, over to you. What did the respondents say on this one, and how did the committee respond?
Thanks, Bruce, and hello to everyone listening. I thought this was a really interesting agenda item, essentially about whether a contract to supply batteries for use in electric vehicles contains a lease of the batteries. Very topical, I think. Now, if you listen to this podcast regularly, you might know that the committee had an initial discussion of this issue in its November meeting last year. We published a tentative agenda decision. Now, we received some really interesting, thoughtful comment letters. And the purpose of this discussion was to consider the feedback received and whether to finalise the agenda decision. Perhaps I should just remind you of the fact pattern. A supplier enters into a 10-year contract with a customer to supply 100 similar batteries. The supplier is assumed to have the practical ability to substitute alternative batteries throughout the contract term. But, and this is a key point, the supplier would not benefit economically from substituting a battery that has been used for less than 3 years. So that's the fact pattern. What were the questions? Well, there were two questions. The first question was whether, when assessing whether there is a lease, you consider each battery separately or consider all of the batteries together. So that's a unit of account question. The committee had previously concluded that you consider each potential separate lease component separately. So in this case, each battery. And almost all respondents agreed with our analysis and conclusion on this first question. The second question, for me, a much harder and more subtle question, was about the particular substitution rights included in the contract. Do they mean there is no identified asset and therefore no lease? As a reminder, IFRS 16 says a customer does not have the right to use an identified asset, i.e. there's no lease, if the supplier has the substantive right to substitute the asset throughout the period of use. And IFRS 16 goes on to list two conditions, both of which must be met this to be the case. The first condition is that the supplier must have the practical ability to substitute alternative assets. And remember, we've assumed that condition is met in this case. And the second condition is that the supplier needs to be able to benefit economically from exercising its substitution right. In November, we'd observed that the second condition, whether the supplier would benefit economically from substitution throughout the period of use, is not met in this fact pattern. And that would mean that each battery would be an identified asset. As I said, we received some really interesting and thoughtful comment letters. There wasn't too much pushback on our overall conclusion. However, respondents did raise some good questions and requested clarifications to the wording in the agenda decision. When the committee looked at the feedback, we confirmed our overall technical analysis and conclusion. However, in light of the feedback, we agreed to change the wording of the agenda decision to better explain our thinking. One key concern that came through in the comment letters was that respondents said the tentative agenda decision could be read to imply that substitution must be economically beneficial continuously throughout the period of use or at all times during the contract term. Under that reading, few, if any, substitution rights would be considered substantive. However, that was really not what the committee meant. We therefore agreed to update the wording of the agenda decision to clarify two things. Firstly, we clarified that the phrase throughout the period of use does not necessarily mean at all times within that period. It doesn't mean at every minute of every day. And secondly, we clarified that determining whether a supplier's substitution right is substantive throughout the period of use can require judgment. However, the facts and circumstances in this case are such that it was clear to us that the supplier's right is not substantive throughout the period of use. Essentially, because of that 3-year period in which no one expects substitution to be economically beneficial. In addition, some respondents suggested extending the scope of the agenda decision to also discuss lease terms. But this was not a question raised in the original submission, and we did not have sufficient details on the fact pattern to conclude on what the lease term might be. However, we thought it would be helpful to refer to the requirements in IFRS 16 that an entity would apply when assessing the lease term. Interestingly, the requirements about lease definition are quite separate to the requirements about lease term. They're very different questions. So, that's the agenda decision the committee voted to finalise in an updated and, I think, improved form. I expect that the ISB will discuss this agenda decision at its April meeting, and if the ISB does not object, then the agenda decision will be published in April.
Thanks, Brian. Now let's move on to premiums receivable from an intermediary and a question that cuts across both IFRS 17 on insurance contracts and IFRS 9 on financial instruments. Now the committee spent a lot of time discussing this question. Sophie, perhaps you can explain what the committee discussed and what it concluded.
Sure, Bruce. And hello, everyone. Yes, this was an interesting question. And as the information obtained from the information request indicated, it is a fact pattern that is very common in many jurisdictions and for many types of insurance contracts. It is therefore no surprise that we spent a lot of time discussing this question. So, the submission described a situation where an intermediary acts as a link between an insurer and a policyholder to arrange an insurance contract. Under this arrangement, the policyholder has paid the premiums to the intermediary, but the insurer has not yet received in cash the premiums from the intermediary. When the policyholder has paid the premiums to the intermediary, it has discharged its obligation under the insurance contract, and the insurer is obliged to provide insurance contract services to the policyholder. If the intermediary fails to pay the premiums to the insurer does not have the right to recover the premiums from the policyholder or to cancel the insurance contract. The question that was asked to us was whether the premiums receivable from the intermediary are future cash flows that are within the boundary of the insurance contract and therefore included in the measurement of the group of insurance contracts applying IFRS 17 or give rise to a separate financial asset applying IFRS 9. As is the case with any question about applying IFRS accounting standards, it is important to identify the starting point for the analysis, and the committee observed that, in this case, IFRS 17 is the starting point. Our first consideration was the requirements in paragraph 33 and B65 of IFRS 17 to determine which cash flows are within the boundary of insurance contract. We observed that paragraph B65 does not distinguish between premiums collected directly from a policyholder and those collected through an intermediary. Therefore, premiums collected through an intermediary are included in the measurement of a group of insurance contracts. This then led to the question of when cash flows are removed from such measurement. The committee looked at the requirements of paragraph 34 of IFRS 17 and observed that the standard is silent on whether future cash flows within the boundary of an insurance contract are removed from the measurement of a group of insurance contracts only when these cash flows are recovered or settle in cash. If you have listened to the discussion, you would have noticed that although committee members were split in whether they think IFRS 17 or IFRS 9 is the preferred standard to apply to the fact pattern, most agreed that they cannot preclude applying the other standard. We, therefore, concluded that in accounting for premiums receivable from an intermediary, when payment by the policyholders discharges their obligation under the insurance contract, an entity can apply either IFRS 17 or IFRS 9. Therefore, the insurer could consider the premiums receivable from the intermediary to be future cash flows within the boundary of the insurance contract, which was view one described in the submission. If this is the case, when applying the general model in IFRS 17, an insurer includes the premiums receivable in the measurement of the group of insurance contracts until recovered in cash, and when applying the premiums allocation approach, the insurer does not increase the liability for remaining coverage. It does so only when it recovers the premiums in cash from the intermediary. Alternatively, the insurer could consider the rights to receive premiums from a policyholder to be settled by the right to receive premiums from the intermediary, because the policyholder has discharged its obligation under the insurance contract. This was view two in the submission. If an insurer takes this view, when applying the general model, it would remove the premiums from the measurement of the group of insurance contract and recognizes a financial asset applying IFRS 9. When applying the premium allocation approach, the insurer would increase the liability for remaining coverage and recognize financial assets applying IFRS 9. Furthermore, although IFRS 17 and IFRS 9 deal with the measurement presentation and disclosure of expected credit losses differently. The committee noted that depending on which view an insurer applies, it is required to apply all the measurement and disclosure requirements on the relevant standard. Given the committee's conclusion that in the five factors described, an entity could apply either IFRS 17 or IFRS 9, we considered whether to add a standard setting project on the interaction between IFRS 17 and 9 to the work plan. On this matter, the committee noted that such a project would involve assessing any unintended consequences that could arise from amending the requirements, and this may take considerable time and effort to complete. We also considered that applying either IFRS 17 or IFRS 9 to the premiums receivable from an intermediary would provide users of financial statements with useful information based on the requirements in the standards, and therefore a standard setting project would not necessarily result in an improvement in financial reporting that would outweigh the costs.
Thanks, Sophie. So the committee has published a tentative agenda decision on this topic. Now, that tentative agenda decision is out for comment until the 22nd of May, and we look forward to hearing from you. With that, we'll sign off until next time. Thanks for listening. Now, as a reminder, you can catch up on previous episodes of this and the ISB podcasts on our website, as well as our YouTube channel and Spotify. For the latest developments, make sure you subscribe on our website. Thanks, everybody. And until next time, take care.